Okay, so we are resuming where we left off in Pirkei Avos, towards the end of the first Perek. It's Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yud Ches, Yud Zayin rather, Mishnah 17. It's on page 548 in the Art Scroll Hebrew English Sidurim. So again, Perek Aleph traces the Shalshelas HaKabbalah, the chain of tradition, from Moshe Rabbeinu through Hillel and Shammai, and then right after introducing Hillel, we introduce Hillel, we introduce Shammai. Then in Mishnah Tezayin, we had introduced Rabban Gamliel Hazaken, Rabban Gamliel the Elder, who was Hillel's grandson, and took over the Nesius, also continued the tradition of being the head of the Sanhedrin, which Hillel had occupied. And then in Yud Zayin we read as follows: Shimon beno Omer. Shimon, his son, used to say. Now, the reference over here is to Rabban Gamliel. In other words, Shimon was the son of Rabban Gamliel, who was mentioned in the previous Mishnah. And most of history knows this Shimon as Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who assumed the Nesius, who assumed the position of being the head of the Sanhedrin after his father, Rabban Gamliel Hazaken, Rabban Gamliel the Elder, passed away. Now, here it gets a little bit confusing just in identifying people, because there are at least two Rabban Gamliels. We'll see there are actually three Rabban Gamliels. And there are two Rabban Shimon ben Gamliels. They kept the same names in the family. So this is the first Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. In other words, his father was the first Rabban Gamliel, so he's the first Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. In much of Shas, we find reference to another Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, but that the one who's usually quoted in Shas is usually the second Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who is the grandson of the one we're mentioning here. Basically, again, just to get a sense of the generations, you have Rabban Gamliel Azakin, Rabban Gamliel the Elder. His son is Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel the First, who's the subject of our Mishnah. His son is Rabban Gamliel the Second, who's also called Rabban Gamliel the Yavne, the one who assumed the Nesius in Yavne, outside of Yerushalayim. His son, meaning the fourth in this chain, is Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel the Second. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel the Second's son is Rabbeinu HaKadosh, is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. So basically, if you follow though, you know, we just laid out five generations: Gamliel, Shimon, Gamliel, Shimon, Rabbeinu Yehuda HaNasi, right? Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So this Shimon Beno is the first Rabban Shimon Gamliel. It's interesting to note that he's called just Shimon Beno, his son, Rabban Gamliel's son. Why is he not referred to by his title, Rabban Shimon Gamliel? So many of the Mefarshim say that this statement, which we're about to read, was probably made by Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel in his youth, at a point before he assumed the position of the Nesius, before he became the head of the Sanhedrin. And the way he's referred to is simply Shimon Beno. You know, he was the son of Rabbi Gamliel, reflects the fact that this statement was made at an earlier point in his own life and an earlier point in his own career. Indeed, many of the Mefarshim point out that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, unfortunately, did not have a long term of service in the Nesius. This Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was one of the Asara Haruge Malchus. He was one of the 10 martyrs who were killed by the Romans. In fact, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was the Nasi, he was the head of the Sanhedrin, when the Romans destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and invaded Yerushalayim. And as we read about on Yom Kippur, he, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, was put to death together with the Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol. The Nasi and the Kohen Gadol were both executed together. And we read on Yom Kippur the very heart-wrenching poem, Eila Eskara, that speaks about how the two of them were brought together. Neither of them, each one said, "Let me die first, so I not see the death of the other one." And at the end of the day, they cast lots, and the lot fell on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who was killed first. after his head was severed. So the poem describes how Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol picked up the severed head of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and said, you know, how is it that this tongue that spoke such beautiful words now is forced to lick the dust, you know, in such a terrible, terrible fashion in which Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was killed. That's the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that we're about to read about today. It's interesting that Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol eulogizes Rabbi Shimon Gamliel as someone who was an incredible darshan, who could speak, you know, beautiful words of Torah, because when we read what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel has to say today, he actually extols the milus, you know, the positive qualities of silence. So let's take a look. Shimon beno Omer, his son Shimon used to say, Kol yomai gudalti ben hachachamim, all of my life I was raised among the chachamim, v'lo motzasi leguf tov el shtika, and I haven't found anything better for the body, for oneself, than silence. The best thing that's out there in the world is to be silent. And the next two statements seem to also focus on the importance of silence. V'lo amedrishu ha'ikar ela hamaisa. Study is not the main thing, but doing is the main thing. V'chol amar b'dvarim may b'chet. And a person who talks too much brings about sin. Three statements that all seem to focus on the importance of being silent. The best thing I've ever found is silence. It's not so much what you learn, you know, which involves talking and discussing, but what you do. Be the silent person who just gets things done and don't talk about it too much. And the truth is, if you increase words, if you talk too much, you're just going to bring about sins. So again, it's a little bit ironic that Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol's eulogy in the moments after Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is executed, his eulogy for Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is how Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was such a wonderful speaker and used to speak words of Torah all the time. You know, certainly Rabbi Shimon Gamliel himself says about himself that it's important to be silent. Let's try to unpack this Mishnah a little bit, because there are various different interpretations of the different parts of this Mishnah, and they each shed different dimensions on what Shimon Gamliel has to say. First of all, Shimon Gamliel speaks about the importance of silence. We understand that it's not always a good thing to speak, but at the same time, one would imagine that it's not always a good thing to be silent. I mean, there are a lot of things in life where there are mitzvos to speak. I mean, if a guy came to davening and just sat there without moving his lips or without speaking at all, we would A, think that's strange, but beyond thinking the fact that it's strange, he wouldn't be yotzei his obligation, wouldn't fulfill his obligations. The person has to mouth the words in order to fulfill his obligations of davening. More than that, when it comes to learning, Chazal tell us that a person, when he learns, is supposed to articulate the words of learning. That's how you remember. In fact, not only are you supposed to articulate the words, you're even supposed to sing the words, Chazal say, if a person learns without a nigun, without singing the words a little bit, you know, some sing more than others, but, you know, without at least some kind of chant that the person uses to remember the Gemara. So that's how the learning sticks in a person's head, by virtue of that sing-song, that chant that a person engages in. So the Rambam, in his commentary, takes this Mishnah as a springboard to say as follows. Clearly, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was not advocating silence in every case, but rather, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying that a person has to be judicious in what he speaks about. And the Rambam, in his commentary, divides all of human speech up into different categories. There's some parts of speech which are prohibited. There's some a person shouldn't speak Lashon Hara under any circumstances. There's some parts of speech which are mitzvos, where a person is supposed to speak words of Torah, words of tefillah and the like, words of chesed, things that are encouraging. And then there are, you know, parts of speech which are neither mitzvos nor averos, they're sort of optional. And there, Rav Shimon HaGamliel was saying, you know, even there, a person should minimize, you know, the degree to which he's speaking. A person shouldn't be a chatterbox. A person shouldn't go through life, you know, talking and talking and talking. But a person should realize that, you know, that words are meant to be used sparingly and judiciously. They have a tradition from the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov said that every person is allotted a certain number of words that they're given to speak in life. And when you finish speaking that allotted number of words, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, your time's up. How you figure that out exactly, I don't know. But maybe let's not talk about it so much. You know, don't want to run out of the requisite number of words. Okay, so that's the Rambam's approach to this Mishnah. You know, silence is golden. Obviously, silence is not the only way we're supposed to go through life. We are supposed to speak in life. But, you know, a person should be thoughtful in terms of the way that he or she speaks. And that's what Rav Shimon Gamliel is trying to bring out. Other Mefarshim point to specific issues which Rav Shimon Gamliel is trying to bring out in his statement. So, for instance, the very last thing which he says, "Kol hamarbe dvarim may be chet." If a person increases words, it brings about sins. So the way our school translates that is one who talks excessively brings on sin, which in a sense is just a restatement of his original point. Lomotsasi laguf tov elishtika. You know, the best thing is to be silent. Why is the best thing to be silent? Because if a person talks too much, you'll end up getting yourself into trouble one way or another. But there are other mefarshim, the Bartanura and Reb Chaim Volozhin take a different approach towards this last statement, and they link this statement to a statement made by Chazal, where Chazal say, as much as we sometimes add offenses around the laws of Torah, it's important to make it very, very clear what's the halacha, what's the chumrah, what's the gzeira, what's the minog. You know, so we have to be very, very clear to draw the boundaries between what's absolutely usur and what's, you know, not recommended, but is not strictly speaking a problem. And in this context, these mefarshim quote the Gemara that speaks about how the original sin of the Eitz Hadas came about in part because Chava was not as careful with this issue as she should be. Again, this is a Rashi and Chumash, probably many of us are familiar with this. God says to Adam, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. In describing what the prohibition is to the Nachash, so Chava says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, don't touch the Eitz Hadas. Now, he didn't say don't touch the Eitz Hadas. When Adam HaRishon conveyed the prohibition to Chava, apparently in a desire to keep her, you know, to keep both of them from coming even close to the prohibition of eating from the Eitz Hadas, so Adam said to Chava, you know what? Not only should you not eat from the fruit of the Eitz Hadas, don't even touch the tree. Don't even go there. Don't even go near there. So to speak, Adam HaRishon made a gzeira. He made a decree to protect the basic halacha, which was not to eat from the fruit of the Eitz Hadas. But because there was a confusion between what was fundamentally Osir and what was just added on as an additional prohibition, just as a safety net, so to speak, to make sure that the basic prohibition would not be violated. So the Nachash goes, pushes Chava against the tree, says, see, nothing happened, you're fine. The same way that nothing happened when you touch the tree, nothing's going to happen when you eat from the tree. Right? So sometimes chumras end up being kulas. Right? Sometimes astringency, if you just, you know, if you don't protect the line between what's the astringency and what's the fundamental halacha, you know, that leads to a person being lenient, you know, and lenient in a way which, as we see with the Eitz Hadas, has terrible, terrible consequences. So these Mefarshim say, "Kol amar b'dvarim may v'chei." That's what it means over here. If you add on, not dvarim in the sense of speech, if you add on extra strictures, so that brings to a situation where a person can, you know, can ultimately sin. A person has to be very, very judicious, even with adding on chumras and the like, or gzeros, or siyogim, fences, that are meant to protect the fundamental halacha, but you still have to maintain, you have to understand what's the halacha and what's the stringency that we added on above and beyond that, right? You know, it would be just, we're coming off of Pesach, the mashal would be the person who's careful about gebroks and can't find, you know, non-gebroks for purchase over Pesach, so lacking the ability to find non-gebroks, he goes out and buys chametz, right? Well, it's non-gebroks, right? So, you know, clearly that's, you know, a mistaken sense of, you know, of priorities. So, you know, that's over here as well. Kolamar b'dvarim may be chayt. You have to remember, what's the isser? What are, you know, fences that we made around the isser? And, you know, that will keep a person straight. That's with regard to this one thing. But let's go back. Let me present as well a very different take, at least on the beginning of this Mishnah, which is offered up by the Tiferes Yisrael. There are two girsos, there are two versions as to how exactly the Mishnah expresses itself. We have in our version, Lo motzasi lo guf tov elo shtika. I have not found anything that's good for the body other than silence. In other words, silence is the best thing. Some versions have the presentation v'lo motzasi laguf tov mishtika, right? Instead of the word ella, they put the mem, you know, in front of shtika. So the simple pshat is that means the same thing. I haven't found anything better for myself, for oneself, than silence. However, the Tiferes Yisrael gives a fascinating explanation with that girsa that takes the idea of Rav Shimon Gamliel and really turns it on its head. It's possible to translate V'lo motzasi laguf tov mishtika as, I never saw anything good come out from silence. V'lo motzasi laguf tov mishtika. Nothing good ever came from being silent. And depending on your personality, you may want to embrace this pshat as opposed to the standard pshat of Rav Shimon Gamliel. What does this mean, says the Tiferes Yisrael? You know, what, you're supposed to be a chatterbox? So says the Tiferes Yisrael, no. But in the context of learning, silence is not always golden. You know, the student who sits there in class, totally silent. Anyone have any questions? Totally silent. Anyone have anything to say? Totally silent. The student who just sits there and doesn't interact at all with the teacher, doesn't interact at all with you know, his chaverim in the class, doesn't interact at all with anybody, that student often, not always, but that student often is simply not going to absorb the material. And again, as we said before, learning out loud is a fundamental aspect of learning, which the Gemara advocates for. So if a person is simply going to sit there and just read the words with his eyes and not participate in a class discussion and not, you know, have a give and take with the teacher, with the Rebbe, with other Talmidim in the class, lo motzasi laguf tov mishtika, nothing good ever came out of silence, says the Tiferes Yisrael, at least in the context of Limud HaTorah. Again, that's not the, I didn't see anyone else who gives that interpretation of the line, but it's worthwhile noting that that approach. There's a sort of a global way of understanding the Mishnah, which is presented by the Abarbanel in Nachlas Avos, where the Abarbanel, as he typically does, calls our attention to a number of interesting things in this Mishnah, and then tries to wrap them all up together in giving a unified pshat. First of all, ask the Abarbanel, how do we understand this introductory phrase to the Mishnah? Kol yomai gudalti ben hachachamim. My whole life, I was raised among Talmidei Chachamim. That's nice. Why is that relevant? I mean, you know, are you writing your autobiography over here? I was raised among Talmidei Chachamim, you know, my whole life. So, the simple pshat is, and this is said by other Mefarshim, that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, I'm not just making a statement sort of, you know, without really thinking about it. I've heard words of wisdom my entire life, and the words of wisdom that stuck with me the most are words that speak of the value of silence. Of all the things that I've learned from the Chachamim, the thing that struck me the most is the value of silence. But the truth is, you could have made a similar statement about any of these Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos. You know, Hillel says, Kol yomai godalti ben hachachamim v'lo motzasi dvar chachma chutz mi'emim ein anili mili. Right? In other words, I was raised by the chachamim my whole life, and the most extraordinary thing that they taught me was, right, it seems like a totally extraneous phrase to say that I was raised by the chachamim, I grew up among chachamim my whole life. Okay, why is that relevant? You know, just tell me. I think that silence is a very important thing. So that's question number one the Abarbanel asks. Question number two, V'lo motzasi laguf tov ela shtika. Literally, I haven't found anything better for the body than silence.
For the body, but not for the mind.
Oh, so right. So the Abarbanel asks, why are you focusing on the body over here? First of all, if anything, right, as Rebbetzin Heffler points out, silence is not something that's good for your body. In other words, if you went, you know, for your physical once a year to your doctor, you know, the doctor's not going to look you over and say, you know what, I think you should talk less, right? That's probably not what's going to happen. Right? It's not a physical thing that a person should be careful not to speak. It's a spiritual, intellectual thing, right? In other words, v'lo motzasi l'neshama tov elishtika. V'lo motzasi l'nefesh tov elishtika. If anything, silence is good for your neshama. You know, it's good for your religious life. It's good for your spiritual life. I mean, does it affect your health? I don't know that being silent affects your health necessarily. But even if you don't want to get into the difference between guf and neshama, v'lo motzasi la'atzmi tov elishtika. V'lo motzasi la'adam tov elishtika. The best thing I found for a person, for myself, is to be quiet. What's the l'lo motzasi laguf tov elishtika? What does that mean? And furthermore, just the Abarbanel asked the kasha that's, you know, sort of plagued us from the beginning over here. You know, it's true that silence is sometimes a good thing, but silence is not always a good thing. You know, when you daven, when you learn, you want to make somebody feel better, you want to walk over to them and tell them a nice encouraging word, you want to schmooze with somebody, you know, to make them feel comfortable. There are times where speaking has its place. You know, what do you mean? The best thing I ever found was shtika. Rabbanel gives a very interesting interpretation that's sort of the flip, the reverse of the Tiferes Yisrael, which we mentioned a few moments ago, and he says as follows. Reb Shimon Gamliel is speaking specifically about a Talmud sitting in front of his Rebbe. When the Talmud is sitting in front of his Rebbe, he is, so to speak, a guf, a unformed body, looking to absorb neshama, looking to absorb spirituality from his Rebbe. Clearly a Talmud, even before he comes into the Shir, has a neshama. It's not as if he's literally getting a soul from his Rebbe, but hopefully the process of being in a Shir is meant, you know, to shape and mold the Talmud. In a sense, he is just a guf, you know, so to speak, a lump of clay as he comes into the Rebbe's Shir, and as the Rebbe presents things, you know, the Rebbe is blowing the neshama into him and molding and shaping the Talmud in a way in which the Talmud can grow on his own, you know, growing in Torah and connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Abarbanel, what Shimon Gamliel meant to say is that when you are in that position, looking to absorb from a Rebbe, looking to grow, the best way you can do that is not to start talking and showing how much you know. Just be quiet, listen, absorb, and let those lessons permeate who you are. And that says the Abarbanel, first of all, is why it says guf, lo motzasi la guf tov ela shtika, meaning when a person is in that state of guf, when they're looking to grow and absorb from a Rebbe, from a mentor, from a teacher, that's when it's particularly important to just allow the knowledge and the information to be absorbed. Right? There's a statement which the Gemara makes in the context of Kashrus, where the Gemara says that Aidi depolat lobola, if something is in the process of exuding something, it can't absorb anything. You can't absorb and give off at the same time. You're either absorbing or you're giving something off. In the context of learning, if you're sitting there in the shiur and all that you're thinking is, let me show off how much I know, I'm going to be the best guy in the shiur, right? I'm going to ask this question and that question and the other question and all of that, and I'm going to show, you know, the Rebbe that I totally know what I'm talking about. Guess what? You know, you're going to end up missing the point of the shiur itself. Sometimes there has to be a certain kind of humility to be able to absorb. And that's kol yomai gudalti bin hachachamim. That's why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel starts off his statement by saying, I know what it means to sit by the feet of Chachamim and absorb. Kol yomai gudalti bin hachachamim. My whole life, I saw myself as someone who was ready to absorb from others. And absorbing from others means, at least at that moment, that you have to be quiet, listen, and absorb, you know, before you get to the point where you can respond and say your own piece. In fact, says the Abarbanel, that's why we find this unusual introduction where Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is not even called by his title. He's Shimon Beno. He's Shimon the son of Rabban Gamliel. Why? Because at least in this Mishnah, the mode in which Rabbi Shimon Gamliel finds himself is in the mode of Talmud. I'm in the mode of the son of the Gadol Hador who's absorbing his lessons. I'm just Shimon. I'm not Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. I'm just Shimon, the son of Rabban Gamliel. I'm just good old Shimon, who's just here as a lump of clay to be able to absorb the lessons that I want to get from my Rebbe. That's what's going on over here. For the person to truly absorb, they have to have a period of quiet. I think, although the Abarbanel doesn't say it, I think the Abarbanel would probably agree that after the person has absorbed, there does come a stage where the person is now ready to respond to the Rebbe. Again, as the Tiferes Yisrael says, if you just sit there and you listen and you never respond, you never ask a question, you know, you're never going to really learn anything. But, you know, before you ask a question, sometimes you have to just listen to the lesson to know what was actually said. Not everything is about your perspective or your thoughts, you know. Sometimes, again, Baruch Hashem, doesn't happen over here, but sometimes, you know, a Rebbe will give a shiur and a Talmud will raise a hand and ask a question that has nothing to do with anything, or make a statement that has nothing to do with anything. I just want, you know, I was just feeling this morning that I wanted to share the following piece of information with everybody here in the class. Well, you know, thank you so much. We do appreciate your holding forth, but, you know, you're not going to be able to learn anything if you're so busy, you know, being the teacher yourself. The person has to know when to be a student, when to listen, when to absorb. And in that context, shtika, silence, is something which is truly golden. That says the Abarbanel, that's what Rav Shimon Gamliel is getting at in this particular Mishnah. Okay, I tried to speak fast, but in any case, silence is golden. So if we end a little bit earlier, that's hopefully fine. Bez Hashem, again, next week we'll pick up, but also at 10:30, we'll try to do 10:30 to 11. It's a short Mishnah. We'll do Mishnah Yud Ches, and we look forward to seeing everybody then. The following week, again, I'm in Eretz Yisrael, in which case, I guess, silence will truly be golden, you know, at least in terms of the Shia.